Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Panzer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a blackjack player named Lone Wolf, with a bit of an unusual story. He's a part-time player from the East Coast. Lone Wolf, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
Before we get into the Lone Wolf part of the interview, we received a question from a listener about blackjack, and this seems to be a good time to put it to Richard. Maybe Lone Wolf has some input, and Richard, after Richard has the first shot. A listener wants to know whether 6-5 blackjack is beatable, and if so, how? Richard.
Well, the short answer is yes. 6-5 blackjack is beatable in all of the same ways that people beat regular blackjack. Counting cards, sequencing, shuffle tracking, hole carding, all of the same ways it is beatable. So now, obviously, you would need a much bigger spread if you were counting cards at 6-5, and that may make you stick out a lot more. In Las Vegas, you would not get away with that for very long at all, but there are still places in the world where they think 6-5 is not beatable, so they don't sweat the game as much. But one thing that pit bosses have really learned over the years is that people with large bet spreads are usually up to something. So, you know, if you bet $25 and then you bet $500, it probably is going to raise some red flags. But the answer is yes, you can beat the game, and many people have done it and been doing it for years. For many of us, we're sort of laughing to ourselves when 6-5 first came out, and everybody was talking about how horrible it was and how nobody should ever play it, because it really was a boon to a lot of professional players when it first arrived. Anyway, so that's the answer.
Okay, Lone Wolf, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I imagine it would be pretty difficult to practically beat that in many cases. I mean, you'd need a pretty high count before that game would really swing to your favor, and then, of course, the swing would be much smaller, and you'd have to bet much more, and as Richard said, it'd probably be a dead giveaway of what you're doing. I did have a funny story once with 6-5 blackjack, and I was at a casino, and I was just absolutely surprised when I was kind of walking around and noticed that they were cutting off at tops about three quarters of a deck on a six deck game. And I happened to be playing a different version of blackjack at the time, so I was just kind of confused as to what was going on, and I'm just happily playing my game. And later I walked around the casino floor, and I realized what was going on was the entire floor was 6-5 blackjack. So the casino, as you said, they're just less concerned about the game generally, and they could happily cut off only three quarters of the deck. I know at the table I was at the one time, it was a full table. We had all the cards come out. The cut card had come out just one or two cards into the deal. A couple people had to split and double down. I was convinced we were going to run out of cards, actually. We got to the end. There were still maybe 10 or 12 cards left, but it actually played nicely to my advantage because I was playing a different game, but they were only cutting off like three quarters of a deck on the entire floor because it was 6-5, and the casino thought, well, this isn't beatable.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of like the old days in Vegas. I literally had a pit boss, more than one, say to me, nobody can count a six-deck shoe. You know, people used to believe that 35 years ago. So, and even in Rain Man, I think he says, you know, well, it's a six-deck shoe, so he can't be counting. But anyway, yeah, there are places like that. Unfortunately, Vegas isn't one of them.
Okay, Lone Wolf, why don't you tell us how you got started playing blackjack?
Well, my actual start was innocent enough. I simply had a convention out in Vegas many years ago that I was going to just for work. And I thought, you know, it'd be nice to learn to count cards before I go to this. And about a month before the convention, I started kind of looking this up and what I could do. I hadn't been in a casino in years. And it came to me pretty quickly that I was not going to be counting cards a month later. So I went there. I played like $200 at a $10 table, almost lost it all before I came back, but I was just gambling. But at that point, I think I was just hooked that I really wanted to do this. So after I came home from the convention, I ended up going to, I think, a Borders bookstore, went to the game section, and the book I ended up finding just by sheerly picking the first book I saw was Black Belt in Blackjack by Arnold Snyder. And so I bought that at first, and then I started reading, and I came home, and I remember when I first started practicing, I just went around the house and found six random decks of cards, which didn't match each other, and started making a shoe for myself and practicing and playing. And finally, after that, I upgraded a little bit by going to the dollar store and getting six flamingo decks, so at least I had six decks that matched after that point. And I also picked up the book before I started playing professional blackjack by Stanford Wong. And I just practiced. And for the next 6 months or so, I just practiced and practiced and practiced, played shoes, practiced counting down decks and things like that until I could do the, you know, under 30 seconds, which they were all saying. And for 6 months, I just spent a lot of time practicing. And then finally, 6 months after getting home or so, I went to the casino and started playing.
And how was that when you, you know, there's a big difference between the kitchen table and the casino. How was it when you first got to the table and tried to count?
I don't think it was that bad. You know, I was playing at kind of lower limit tables because I didn't have a lot of a bankroll to start. So it's pretty crowded at the tables, and that actually kind of helps out, because even if you're not sure if you got the count the first time, you can sit there and go back down the table again and double check. It wasn't like I was playing heads up and I had a really fast dealer or anything like that. So I don't specifically remember any problems on my first trip. You know, it's a little bit of nervousness at first when you get started, but yeah, it went fairly smoothly. I think I won a few bucks the first time I played. So the first trip was actually pretty good, I think.
And what were you spreading?
Well, I started pretty small. We had decided that my original bankroll would just be $2,000 the first year. And then if I lost it all, I had to wait a year and I could have another $200,000.
This is the agreement you came up with your wife.
Absolutely. It was basically accepted that I was taking $2,000 of entertainment money and throwing it away. So it was acceptable. So, I mean, I basically would spend all my time looking for $5 or $10 tables, which were difficult to find. There were a couple $5 tables around that I could find back then, mostly tens. And I might spread 70 or 80 bucks back then. It was just all red chips.
And how did that $2,000 bankroll go?
Not good. The first little over 2 years were kind of a struggle. I basically maybe play about once a month, averaged playing time, maybe about 10 hours. So I play about 120 hours a year, I'd say. And, for the first a little over 2 years, I just labored. That first year, I finished basically on fumes. My bankroll was probably only down to maybe $300 or $400 at the end of the year, just enough really that I only felt comfortable back counting. So I'd go to a casino, walk around, back count a few decks. If I could jump in and maybe only bet 50 or something like that, because it wouldn't have taken too many bets to finish me off at that point. I did make it to the end of the year, but finished the first year on fumes.
Okay, and then you got a $2,000 replenishment bankroll for the second year, right?
Then I got another $2,000 replenishment bankroll in year two.
Sure is good. You have a wealthy wife. This is good.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was just kind of entertainment money. It was something we figured that if we lost it, it wouldn't change our lives, and that's what we were willing to do.
No, actually, I have to say you have a pretty understanding wife, because – you know, I think a lot of wives, well, not a lot, some number of wives would go for the first year, like, okay, you can try $2,000. But for her to agree ahead of time that you would get, you know, three shots at it for $2,000 each, I think that's a pretty understanding wife.
It was. You know, we considered it just entertainment money, and from her perspective, it was lost, it was gone. And if you consider the sheer amount of times I spent at home playing and practicing and all that, it was probably only about a couple dollars an hour I was spending, even if I lost it all. But the second year didn't go too much better. I continued to struggle. I had some up times and some down times. But I did have a saving grace my second year. This was about the time that the Ultimate Blackjack Tour came out. And Play UBT was online, and that, of course, was all free stuff. And then Ultimate Bet started offering elimination blackjack tournaments online for money. So I diverted, I think, about $100 or so from my fund into that, because I'd been playing the free ones on Play UBT with reasonable success. And then I just switched over and started playing the online tournaments as well. That actually went really, really well for me, better than should have been expected. It was great. You know, I got to play with some guys. I think you had Joe Payne on there a while ago, and when I saw that on the script, I thought, Joe Payne, I think I know that name. And then I realized it was from online. Anthony Curtis used to play on those. Ken Smith used to play as well. I used to love to watch him play. I mean, basically, he was my idol when it came to that. Sometimes I would just go online and check to see if Ken Smith was playing a tournament. And if he was, I'd just sit down and watch because I wanted to see what he was doing. I liked his strategy. I liked his conservative strategy there. And I ended up having a lot of success online. $100 became hundreds of dollars, became thousands of dollars. I won, and I won a lot. And part of it, I think, was good play, and part of it was some good luck. So for as badly as things were going on live play with playing in casinos, and I think that was just some bad luck there, the elimination blackjack tournaments were basically my saving grace. Otherwise, I would have been wiped out in year two. But I was not, because I was able to start pulling money out of the online account and bringing that into my live play account. So year two was kind of bad as well.
Did you seek out live tournaments to play?
There really isn't much here. As you mentioned earlier, I'm mostly an East Coast player. There really aren't many live tournaments here. Like Niagara Falls has them and things like that. But in Jersey or Pennsylvania or Delaware, New York, it's really hard to find any live tournaments, even for a buy-in. It's just they're not common out here.
Huh.
So, and you'd mentioned.
So at the end of year two, you had a plus score. Does your wife still put in the extra $2,000 for year three, or did you?
I had a plus score, but not much. So we agreed that, you know, in order to continue to fund the bankroll, which was actually slightly ahead because of the online, that we would, you know, it was good to go for another, put another $2,000 in there. So that put me a little more money in my account, but my third year also started poorly. I was just struggling in live play, and I was probably up to maybe 250 or 260 hours of live play, and I had plenty of winning sessions, but I was definitely losing in live play. And that was actually pretty frustrating at that point, because I was pretty sure I was playing successfully. I'm pretty sure I was playing with an edge, but you know, a 250-hour losing streak, although not obscenely long, is a pretty hard way to start to not be up after that point. But I'd say about mid my third year, it just turned around. It just absolutely turned around. My big thing that turned it around was, and you'd asked about live tournaments, it's the one of the times I got to play a live tournament. I got an invitation to a tournament at Trump Marina, and it was a $10,000 blackjack tournament. $7,500 goes to first. And what it was is one of these tournaments that it's basically just a crapshoot to start. that you have to play so many hands against the dealer, and they do that for like 3 or 4 hours, and the top seven totals advance to the final table. And what I did to save myself there was I went there when the tournament started, and I spent the next 3 hours watching everyone play so I knew exactly what I needed to get to that final table. And so many people had gone crazy betting money that it was – I barely had to do anything. I think you started with 6,000 in chips, and I only had to basically double them up to get to the final table. And I remember getting to about 15,000, and the dealer looking at me and saying, no, you're going to need more than that. I'm thinking, no, I don't. I'm good. And I got to the final table, and I didn't get all the 7,500 because we all agreed to work out a deal to split the money a little differently. But I won that money. I went and played more that night. I won, and then I just went on a tear for the next year. I just couldn't seem to lose. Just every trip was a winner, 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 and that's when it finally turned around for me.
So what did you get up to that year? I mean, how you went basically from $2,000 in year one, and where were you at the end of year three?
I think around year three, including the online stuff, I probably had pretty much tripled my initial input at that point. My total initial input for the 3 years, I was probably somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 after 3 years total, including the initial input.
Okay, and so now what was the conversation with your wife? I'm ready to quit my job or
no
or what?
No, it was never going to be that. I was never willing to do all the travel. I had young kids. It just would have been too hard. It was just. Well, this is good. We're not losing money anymore, at least. So, it was nice. We did stop putting the investment in at that point. We figured there was enough in the account that it was self-sufficient at that point. And starting maybe around year four, as it continued to grow, I was able to move from reds to greens comfortably, which was nice.
And what were you spreading now at this point? What was your top bet now?
I would say around year four, it might have been around 200 or 300. It's a little higher now. I kind of simulate everything out to a top bet of about 500. I don't know that I often actually hit it, but my simulations and my allowances say I can basically put out a top bet of 500 right now and not even really worry about it anymore.
And so when did the heat start coming?
I would say not the first couple years or so. It took a while to really get caught. I think I've only ever been backed off in all my years playing. I think I've only been backed off maybe four times. Twice, I think, resulted from me doing something that I just don't do anymore. I got to the point where my bankroll was comfortable and I was feeling good with the money I had that I would go and play a trip and do most of it on the main floor. And then at the end of the trip, I thought, you know, I'm just going to go into the high limit room and maybe I'll play a shoe. And I think the first time I did that, it was at Showboat, and they caught me like almost instantly. And it was just basically on the standing or hitting 16 against a 10. And I had only played a shoe or so, and suddenly the pit boss said, "No, sorry, you can only flat bet. You can't move your bet anymore." It's like, of course we played the game, we danced, and I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He says, "I'm not going into this." "What are you talking about?" He says, "Okay, no. Hit 16, stand 16, stand 16. No, we know what we're talking about. Just, you know, you can't move your bet at all." So I got caught a couple times in high limit rooms, and I just don't play that game anymore because obviously they're watching too carefully there.
And so this was obviously Atlantic City where they're not allowed to bar you. So it sounds like it was a lot less traumatic than a lot of people's first barring that is not so easy.
Yeah, they just capped my bet. And when they caught me that time, I was playing unrated anyway. I went in. I was only going to play a shoe. It was no big deal. So maybe that was another reason they were watching me a little more carefully. You know, who's this guy coming into a high limit room? You know, betting $100 or $200, and he doesn't want to get raided. So that easily could have been it as well. But yeah, there was nothing traumatic there with that one.
And how many years have you now been playing?
12 or 13 years now. I've got about 1,500 hours of play in at this point.
So still not much more than 120 or 130 hours a year. Not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I still have a job. I still have a lot of other things I do. I just kind of get out about once a month and go play. I've never picked it up that this is something I'm going to be doing 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. I just, sometimes I'll get out once a month. Sometimes I'll get out twice a month, or maybe I'll go for a couple days and play a little longer. Or sometimes I might go 2 or 3 months and not play at all. It's just kind of, I'm very serious about it. I work very hard at it. I practice a lot, and I want to win. I play to win, but it's just recreational for me.
Okay, and at some point you decided to switch away from regular blackjack into some variants, right? Why don't you tell us about that?
That started, I was reading some of the bulletin boards, and I saw some comments about a book by Katarina Walker on Spanish 21. So I ended up buying her book and reading that. And for me, it was just another opportunity to kind of, it was just interesting. And as I said, I'm just doing this for fun. So this was an interesting alternative for me. So I read her book, and I thought this would be kind of interesting to do, but I wasn't sure. There were a couple legitimate blackjack people in the foreword and with comments and things like that on the back, but I wasn't sure if this was totally legit. So I ended up writing some code and things like that that could play the game as well, and confirm that this does seem to be working and good, and that just playing the variant was another opportunity for me to do something different at the casinos. But I found it to be very good, because the cover from playing variants is awesome.
Right. So as we were talking about at the beginning with 6-5, in the beginning with Spanish 21, a lot of casinos thought, oh, nobody can beat that game.
Yeah. And I find they still don't watch it. Now, granted, against a good blackjack game, this is not quite as good as a good blackjack game. If you go to a casino in Pennsylvania where, you're allowed to double after split and split to four hands, and they stand on soft 17 by state law. And by state law, they offer early surrender at all games in Pennsylvania, whether they're double deck or six deck or whatever. That's a little better game in terms of the expected value for any given hand.
Did you just say early surrender? You mean
late surrender. Oh, late surrender.
Yeah.
Yes, not early surrender.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
You get that big off the top.
Richard was halfway to the airport for Philadelphia.
No, late surrender. That was my bad. But
still, the important thing is how much they're going to let you take.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, the rules are better, but if they don't let you win anything, it's,
Oh, exactly. And, I was listening to one of your previous shows where you had a surveillance person there, and they're talking about how, the surveillance doesn't have as many people upstairs as they used to have it anymore, and they rely on the pit at this point to kind of identify things. If you're playing some of these variants and the dealer just thinks you're a stone-cold idiot, no one's calling upstairs. It's the glory of it. Most of these variant games, especially Spanish, are usually in carnival pits. You look around, and sometimes there's no blackjack tables around you. It's all four-card poker and three-card poker and all these other, carnival games. There's no blackjack tables even around you. They put it in those pits. So they're not thinking about that to this day in most of the casinos I've been in. The dealers don't know the games. So when I'm sitting there and I've got, 14 and the dealer's showing a three and I'm saying hit, and the dealer's looking at me, are you sure? And then I say, yeah, I want a hit. And then I take a hit and I pull a 10, and the dealer scoops my cards up and puts them in the discard tray, and they're shaking their head like you're some sort of idiot. Yeah, they're just not thinking about you being a smart player because they don't know the game for the most part. There's not that many of them out there. So, I mean, it just makes life so much simpler now in terms of being afraid of what's going to happen.
And so have you been playing other variants as well? Like what other versions are you interested in?
There are some other versions that I have played. I've simulated them. I've taken the computer program that I originally modified for Spanish 21, and I changed the game to play a few other games. Most of them are smaller. I've played a few. Because some of them are rather small, I'd rather not go into any detail on them. But there are a few other variants I've played at times as well, which in many ways offer many of the same covers because the plays aren't the same as regular blackjacks. There aren't many tables out there. The dealers don't know the right plays. And if you're being friendly in the pit and everyone seems happy and the dealer thinks you're dumb, it's all good.
Right. Have you played Blackjack Switch?
A little bit, yes. But I have played that one as well.
And again, a game that was great in the beginning, but in Las Vegas, they just have seen too much around here, you know?
Right. So, yeah, there's not many games out there of that. You know, not many Blackjack Switch games on the East Coast. I think a little more out in Vegas. But, there just aren't many games here.
On these index numbers you can create by being a computer programmer, there very possibly would be some of our listeners interested in obtaining those. Is your work for sale? And if so, how do people get in touch with you?
I guess the long and short answer of that is the same. It'd probably be no. I can tell you right now with Spanish, the smaller games, you know, I'd rather not. For Spanish, I can tell you exactly what I do. It's because this is, you know, this book is still public information. You can go online and buy, you know, Katarina Walker's book. It's not private. The only thing I do is I've modified the count a little bit. I use her indexes. I count aces as two instead of one, and I count fives as 1.5 instead of one as well. So aces are minus two, of course, not. They're minus two instead of minus one. So, and then after that, her running count starts, her true count starts at minus four per deck. My true count starts as minus two per deck because my count system is slightly different, and I just use that. So I use exactly her system, and I modify the counts on there just to increase my advantage a little bit, which is really nice because with a running count of minus two, no matter how many decks it is, when the count becomes zero, that's when the advantage switches to your hand, to your advantage. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yes, and if you can deal with those half counts, so that's going to be easier for some people than others.
I agree. And I've heard many of your shows where you have debated with different people. Do you do the more complicated count? Do you do the easy count? And, you know, to be honest, if I were playing massive hours a week on multiple days in a row, I think the multi-tiered count would become complicated. But when I only go and play for 4 or 5 hours and then get something to eat and then play for a few more hours again and then I'm done, it is a little more tiring. I know when I play a single count system, it just seems like really easy in comparison. But using the multi-count system is worked for me because, like I said, I don't play the long sessions.
I get that.
You call yourself Lone Wolf. How'd that name come about?
That's a name that I have chosen just mostly in contacting you guys because I've pretty much been on my own all this time. Not that I haven't used other people's information and I've thought of this on my own. I have not. I've done all of what I've done based on the brilliance of many other people before me, but I kind of got started on my own, I spent the first few years just kind of always playing on my own. I didn't really know any other card counters at all. It isn't until the last year or so that I happened to come across someone in my play that was a more of a serious counter. But before that, I was just kind of on my own. So I would talk to people on bulletin boards. I'd read books. So I just thought, you know, a nickname would be Lone Wolf there, because I've kind of had to do this independently, as opposed to many of the other people that you talk to who have either been to seminars or met other people and things like that. I've kind of just been doing it here as my own thing.
So now you've gotten your family involved in this?
Yeah. The reactions have varied from my family as I've gotten involved in doing this. My wife, of course, has been very supportive because, well, at this point I've won money, so that makes it a lot easier to say, yeah, this is okay. It works by me. It's my entertainment and takes all my entertainment time up, and I'm not losing money, so that's good. My mom was definitely against it at first. She just didn't like the idea of me being in casinos and being in the environment and perhaps being addictive behavior and all that, so she was very much against it. And kind of one of the funny things at first is I spent all of my 6 months training, spending hours a week, you know, practicing. I went on my first trip, and as I said, I think it was a winner, but it was pretty small, you know, maybe I won $100 or something like that. And I come home, and I explained to my mom that, look, I won and stuff like that. She said, okay, great. So it worked. Are you done now? It's like, I just spent like hundreds of hours practicing. I'm going to go play one time and quit. So she was just not really happy with me being involved in the environment there.
As far as you know, has she cut you out of her will yet?
Well, she's since passed, so that's not much of an issue anymore. But no, she passed several years ago. So, no, I mean, there was, you know, it didn't add much conflict in our relationship after that. She just never really approved of what I was doing. So the kids were kind of funny when I first started to play in terms of their reactions. My daughter, from a very young age, always thought this was really cool and really interesting what I did. And sometimes she, when I'm practicing, she would kind of watch and ask what I'm doing. And I still remember one time there was a conversation that, and she was pretty young, and something came up. We were talking to some people, and my daughter says, oh, soft 17, you always hit soft 17. And my wife's like, yeah, that's what a mom always wants to hear, her 12-year-old daughter saying, always hit soft 17. Yeah, it was just kind of a funny reaction.
Well, that's certainly what Richard would want his kids to be saying at 12 years old.
I've told the story on the air before, but, you know, when my son was about 2 or 3, I would say, what comes after 8, 9, 10? And he'd say, Jack, Queen, King.
Exactly.
All right.
And then Ace.
Before we hear more about his daughter, we're going to take a brief break for some commercials. But there's definitely more to hear about his daughter and others. We're talking to Lone Wolf about his blackjack experience. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In April, the promotion of the month involves free buffets. Earn 300 points between 3 a.m. and 1 p.m., Monday through Thursday, and earn a free buffet. Earn 600 points in that same period and earn both a lunch buffet and a dinner buffet. If you fail to earn the 600 points prior to 1 p.m., but do earn them prior to 8 p.m., you earn a free dinner buffet, but not the lunch buffet. You print the vouchers at the kiosk when earned. You may use the coupons for lesser meals, such as either a lunch or dinner coupon may be used for breakfast. Also, you may redeem as many coupons as you have. So if you have a group of 5 friends and you have 6 tickets, take them all out to lunch. Also, at the South Point in April, for players who provided their email addresses, for 4 Friday through Sunday weekends, those players may come in and play and earn additional free play. The amount you earn is usually more than your normal free play amount. with the players with the biggest mailers receiving the biggest amounts. The South Point runs versions of this promotion 3 or 4 times a year, meaning that if you are a local, it pays to give them your email address. They have a nice bribery system that way. Monday remains senior day. For those 50 years of age and older, you get half-price meals using points, half-price movies, and free slot tournaments. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Extra Action Poker. With this game, you pay an extra 5 or 10 or 15 coins, and every ace you're dealt is held in extra hands. You play the regular game with no difference in strategy. On the extra hands, holding the aces only, it plays itself, each out of a new deck. Those extra hands, assuming you're playing all of the max coins, is 99.30%. In Deuces Wild variations, deuces are held. That has an EV of 99.2. If the base game is less than these numbers, and you figure the game is worth playing anyway, perhaps because of a slot club multiplier or promotions, paying for the extra action feature makes sense because your EV is increased. If you find this feature on a pay schedule less than 99.3, playing the extra action feature lowers the EV on the game. All right, we're talking to Lone Wolf. And as we teased when we went out the door, we said there's more to hear about his daughter. So tell us about your daughter who started to learn at age 12.
Well, yeah, she she was always fascinated by the whole thing. So she was quite interested in playing. So finally, when she turned 21, we were able to take a trip to Vegas a couple summers ago. Nice and warm, of course, in the summer when you're walking around out there. And we ended up just getting a chance to play together finally, which was really nice. Nice having a young set of eyes out there for some of the opportunities we were looking for. I was impressed with Vegas. They're much tighter with their games than they are pretty much anywhere in the U.S., and I've come to realize that the more remote a casino is, the less careful they tend to be for advantage players. So Vegas was really tight with that. But my daughter and I, we went out there. We spent a few hours finding a game that we really liked. But once we found something that was playable for us after several hours of hunting, we sat down. And obviously, we probably weren't just simply counting a card game at this point. We were looking for some other opportunities. We just had a great time playing. We ended up winning several thousand dollars on our first table that we sat at, which was an amazing experience for her. And then they turned around and comped us some free meals and all that. And they, of course, she was hooked at this point. Sadly, the next day we found another opportunity to play, and we lost about twice as much money as we won the day before. So probably a good lesson for a first-time player, though, that it's not always going to go in your favor at that point.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, I think it's really good that she had that second experience, because without it, bad things can happen.
Oh, we just felt like absolute kings the first time we played. I mean, we had won. At the end, they said, hey, we can have a nice meal for you at one of our nicer restaurants here, because we were playing one of these garbage games and betting a whole ton of money, and everything was great. And yeah, it was, you never want to lose, but it probably was a good experience to say, it's not that easy as it just was that night. So.
And so has she continued playing?
We don't get to play together too much. We've played together maybe once or twice since then. And we hope to play together in the future. But she's got a busy schedule.
So she's not out playing on her own at all?
No. She just comes and plays with me. She wouldn't be as interested in risking her money, although she understands that mathematically the arrow points up. At this point in her life, she's not interested in, because she would only play part-time as well, not interested in in taking the same risk. So we just kind of go and play together, you know, maybe once or twice a year. It's not a real common thing for us.
When you play, do you play as father-daughter or some kind of creepy relationship you could tell us about?
It's just father-daughter. Yeah, we just play as father-daughter. We've talked about maybe the next time trying to do something where, you know, maybe if she could be at one table and I could be at another table and maybe work something that way. But right now we just basically sit and play. So a good story with my wife playing too. Just, Richard, you had asked previously, do I get to play any many live tournaments? My wife never really, you know, does anything besides just sit and play with me. She doesn't really look for any opportunities. But there was a time a few years ago that Tropicana used to have some free roll blackjack tournaments down there. And it was one of those things, again, where you have to play so many hands against the dealer just to get to the semifinals. But they did have seven tables of seven, so like 49 people got to the semifinals. And we were both fortunate enough to make it to the semifinals. And then at the semifinal table, I end up winning my table. It was 12 hands against the dealer, and there were seven tables of seven. The top person from each table goes to the final table. I just sat there like a slug, and the dealer crushed everyone after like five or six hands. It was great. So after I'm done, my wife was at another table, and I head on over there, and she ended up having this guy next to her that just was the stereotypical male towards some female gamblers and things like that. He was drunk at the table. He was demeaning to everyone at the table. My wife ends up sitting next to him. And he's just, you know, saying all sorts of stuff to her. And my wife had played some online tournaments through PlayUBT, so she knew basically what to do. And she's trying to look at the guy's chips to count. He's huddling over them, not letting her look. And the dealer has to tell him, look, you have to let her look at the chips. And he was just rude and obnoxious the whole time. So when I finally get up and go over to my table, their table had just ended. And all I hear from about five or six tables away in an amazingly loud voice is my wife yelling, "You're an asshole. I hope you lose." Which is not my wife, if you need to understand. She is one of the nicest people on the planet who I've never heard to yell at anyone in all my life. This guy must have been so rude at the table. And I remember he ended up winning his table. He got lucky. And I got plopped down to the final table, and he just looks at me and says, "You know, your wife's a real hothead." And I said, "Sir, if my wife yelled at you, I'm sure you deserved it. Because there's no way she acts like that." So, just an interesting story with my wife playing the one time.
So, was he an asshole?
Well, he was.
It sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he ends up sitting next to me at the table, and he's just spending his time talking about, "Oh, I know what I'm doing," and blah, 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 and, you know. He ended up didn't having as much to spout about at my table because the dealer knocked him out fairly early. But, you know, he was drunk. He was just, you know, basically thought of the world of himself. And he ended up getting my wife pretty ticked off that time.
Did she cheer very loudly when he lost?
No, she had calmed down at that point. Like I said, she's actually very nice. So she did not continue at that point, but she was happy to see him get knocked off the table.
Well, any opposition to her husband would be knocked off would be good.
That's true. That's true. I ended up getting knocked off the table, too. I didn't win.
Uh-huh. I didn't cheer then either.
No.
So a while ago, you spent some time being a blackjack writer. Is that something you still want to do in the future or not?
It was just kind of more of an opportunistic thing. I know that BJ Insider used to put out – oh, they still do put out a monthly – newsletter, and part of that is Frank Scoblete, if I'm pronouncing his last name right.
Scobletti.
Writing.
Scobletti. It's Scobletti. Yeah.
All right, there you go. I've only ever seen it in writing. Frank Scobletti wrote an Atlantic City monthly report for that as well back then, years ago. I don't even think they include the Atlantic City report anymore. But years ago, he used to do that, and I would read that, and I kind of noticed that he probably wasn't getting there as often, so he just would basically roll things in from month to month. So I thought, what the heck, I'll toss something in there. So for probably a year or so, I used to, basically write a letter to him or an email to him, which then he would record, he add into his report as, you know, reports from readers and things like that. So I did that for about a year, I think. But that was more just an opportunistic thing that I kind of saw it there and thought I could kind of throw my two cents in with, you know, out causing too much risk for myself.
And so, but you didn't, you don't have any interest in doing any further writing?
Not right now. No, I don't think so. That was just, once again, just one of those things that seemed like kind of fun to toss my two cents into his report as I was reading them.
Hmm.
So when we were talking about backoffs earlier, where it wasn't much of a backoff, just before that, you said you had been backed off four times. Was that at a blackjack player, a hole carder, or something else? Or was there anything unusual about those?
The four backoffs I'm referring to are primarily for blackjack. I was in PA casinos a couple times backed off for hole carding, but I wasn't even really backed off. I think they were just, think I was just taking an opportunity that I happened to see. They basically just told the dealer, you know, fix what you're doing, and that was the end of it. You know, there was nothing for me. So that was a couple times in PA. But yeah, I did get backed off a few times in Jersey. Sometimes blackjack, sometimes playing variants. I know, I mentioned Showboat, they're closed. The first time I was backed off there was in the high limit room, unrated, so I didn't have any consequences to that. But unfortunately, the second time was playing Spanish, and that's unfortunate because I was being raided, and unfortunately that just killed me on all of the Harrah's and Caesars properties, so I lost a lot of properties that day in terms of being raided. But yeah, basically I was about halfway through a shoe, and suddenly the pit boss comes up to and says, shuffle up the cards. And there was only one other person at the table. And I, of course, I know what this is about. They shuffle up the cards, and it was hand shuffle. So we had to sit there for 5 minutes and wait for the hand shuffle. But I'm not going to get up right away. I'm not going to confirm, obviously, his suspicions. So they shuffle up the I think it was the decks of Spanish they had there. They shuffle that all up, put it back in the shoe, deals one hand. Pit boss comes up, says, shuffle up the cards again. And I just look at the person next to me. I'm trying to play stupid. I look at the dealer, says, you know what this is about? And he's like, I don't know. So he spends 5 minutes shuffling them all up again. And then they started dealing. I think he dealt two or three hands. And the pit boss came up to me and said, shuffle them up again. And then he looks at me and just says, we can do this all day, or you can just leave right now. So that was probably my most entertaining back off, because it was kind of funny. And once again, why I don't understand. But he said, yeah, I'm not getting into it, we know what we're all doing here. It's like, cashed out my chips and I left. And so unfortunately, as I said, that the bummer there is that I got caught at one place, but that in terms of being raided cost me playing at several places. But another story with that is it does show the how little they watch the Spanish table sometimes. I returned, I think, about 3 months later to Showboat. Played on a different shift. I sat at that same table that I had been backed off of for 8.5 hours, spreading my bets anywhere from $5 a hand to $400 a hand, and no one said boo. I mean, it's just surprising. So I've also been backed off at the Taj. I think they once again caught me because I got caught basically doing one of my high roller room things. They definitely showed a lot of suspicion as I was getting up. I won a few $100s. They just seemed to suddenly be watching. The pit boss was watching very carefully. And the next time I played, I sat down and I got, I probably within 10 or 15 minutes, they just said, no, we're capping your bet. And it could not have been what I was doing then. I think they basically caught me in the high limit room. And then when I was on the regular floor, they just followed up their suspicions when they saw any variation in my bet the second time. So I got caught at the Trump too.
But you haven't had any bad backoffs, it sounds like.
No. Like I said, I've only ever been I was backed off at the Trump, backed off at Showboat twice, once unrated, and backed off, unfortunately, at the Trop, so I can't play rated there anymore either. I think the Tropicana did not catch me because of my actual play. I think the computer caught me at the Tropicana. And once again, I mentioned this because my name's dead there anyway at this point. I was playing a game of Spanish. I had sat down. I was betting $25 a hand. I was about halfway through the slew. I raised it up to 75, and they backed me off. And it was, and once again, backing off just simply meant they flat betted. Nothing bad happened. So I'm pretty sure that was just the computer, though. I had been playing there rated for 7 or 8 years. Most of those years were wins. And I think at this point they finally looked at it somewhere and said, okay, something's up. Because after 7 or 8 years and you're still kind of basically winning every year, something's wrong. And they backed me off as well. But nothing serious.
Yeah.
I will say that
that's one of the dangers of playing rated.
You know, the thing is now I only go down once a month, or, you know, and I don't even go necessarily to AC because I have so many options here. I have Delaware, I have Pennsylvania, I have New York, I have Maryland. If I want to go play once a month, you know, I can go back down to that casino and play unrated later, but I might not be there for 7 or 8 or 9 months, and it might be on a different shift. So I might not return on the shift that I got caught for a year and a half, and then you're never going to remember me at that point. So,
right.
Yeah, I can't get the comps anymore. You know, as I said, I'm dead on Harrah's and Caesars. I'm dead at Tropicana. Now Trump closed. Trump was actually an interesting story with their rating. They were pretty incompetent with how they reported everything. Just baffled at this point. I got backed off at the table. My comp offer stopped, and like 2 or 3 months later, they started back up again. I started getting mailers. And it was like, what the heck? So I went down, and I, about 6 months later, gave my name at a table, gave my player's card in. The one pit boss comes over right away, walks over to another pit boss, comes back, says, I'm sorry, we need to cap your bet at so many dollars a hand, and you can only play one hand. But I continued to get offers. They never told the rewards people that I had been caught.
That's really common.
In fact, it was worse. They didn't even tell their sister properties. I figured, okay, for the next year or so, I'm done. So I wait about a year, go to one of the sister properties down there, give my player's card in. I'm waiting to get, you know, to get flat bet. Nothing happens. They just, fine. So I was fine to play at the sister properties. They had reported it in their system for the players at the Taj only, but not at the two sister properties down there, and not to rewards. The only problem was I couldn't. I was getting $300 match plays then, and if I would sit down at the table, they would cap my bet at 100, so I couldn't use the match plays. Because the match plays, you had to give my name.
You could use it at craps or something, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could have done something like, you know, why didn't I think of that? Yeah, you're right. I could have done something like that. What the heck's wrong with me? Oh, my gosh. And they're closed now. You're right. I could have taken that to a craps table. Yeah, that was poor thinking on my part.
Well, there you go. That come on gambling with an edge, and you'll learn these things.
And that's why I should be talking to more people like you. That was just, you know, good grief, that was years ago. And you say that now, it's like, yeah, I know that. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, I could have taken the $300 max play to a craps table, and they wouldn't have backed me off for that. Well, I should have called it a few years ago.
Richard, we just ruined this poor guy's day.
Yeah, right.
Okay, we're out of questions for Lone Wolf. And it just happened in the mail. I got another blackjack question that neither Richard nor Lone Wolf know is coming. But I'm going to read it and in order of Richard and then Lone Wolf. See if they want to address it. I'm possibly under the opinion that it should not be answered on the air. But Richard and Lone Wolf will tell me that if we get to that point. All right.
Okay.
I've been
I'll defer to Richard's expertise.
I've been practicing Advantage Play Blackjack for a couple of years using software at a few local casinos, playing mostly with $10 minimum, max $150. My bankroll has improved. I now have a bankroll of $10,000. I will probably play $25 minimum, spreading to about $300 to keep my risk of ruin at about 5%. He wants to go on a five-day trip somewhere in the United States. And his question is, where? He wants a place where a lot of casinos, so in case he's backed off in some, where he won't have to drive hours to get to the next. He's thinking Las Vegas has lots of casinos, but they back off people a lot. So he wants to know, on this junket, where should he go play? Richard.
Well, first of all, when he was describing his bankroll, I thought this question had come from Lone Wolf somewhat. I mean, he's looking for $5 and $10 tables. I would not.
$25 table. He wants the $25 minimum, capping his bet about $300 is what he said. He has a bankroll of $10,000.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I misunderstood. I thought he was betting a lot less than that. Boy. Well, Lone Wolf can comment on whether he thinks that he would get any action on the East Coast. My first thought would be maybe Mississippi. But I guess it depends on where he's starting from, too, how far he wants to go.
If you were going from Mississippi, would you start at the top at Tunica or at the bottom at Biloxi?
I would go to Biloxi and Gulfport. He could come to Vegas, but just realize you're gonna do a lot of walking. You can't just sit and camp. If you want to go play one shoe, and move to the next place, yeah, you can do that in Vegas because there's lots and lots of places to play.
Yeah, I think in terms of the East Coast, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the Philadelphia area even. If you don't want to drive hours and hours to the next casino, you can start in Delaware. You've got Delaware Park that's just below Pennsylvania. You drive about 20 minutes up 95, and then you can get to a casino that's south of Philadelphia, and then you drive about another 20 minutes up 95, and there's another casino there in Philadelphia, and then you can drive about 30 minutes and get off 95 and into Bucks County and hit another casino. You could then turn about an hour north and go to the Bethlehem area and hit Sands. You can swing back down to Valley Forge and hit Valley Forge Casino. There's five or six casinos just in the area there. The advantage, if you did Pennsylvania with a smaller bankroll, is you're going to get good rules. Because it doesn't matter whether it's high limit, low limit, whatever. By law, the rules in Pennsylvania are all solid. You're going to get, as I said, the late surrender. A couple of the casinos even let you resplit aces, which was surprising. The house advantage in Pennsylvania by state law is only about 0.3% off the top. So if you pick an area in Pennsylvania where they're pretty densely populated, and even if you get tired there, you can drive out to the Hershey area for a couple hours and play Hollywood Casino. There's just on the eastern side of Pennsylvania, there's a lot of casinos, and no matter what limit you find, you're going to get good rules.
Yeah, so there's some options for you.
Okay, so thank you very much, Lone Wolf. Continued success. I'm glad you find a way that your daughter still thinks you're cool.
She does. We have fun when we go.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.